The Rebels Prepare to Strike. Chapter 32, in which the Rebellion makes bold plans. On the edge of the galaxy, many parsecs from any Imperial star system, the Rebel fleet has gathered near the planet Sullust. They've given up on maintaining a base on land. This is all that's left. A handful of strange, patched-together starships, a few partial squadrons of fighters, and of course, the Millennium Falcon. All the pilots have assembled on the flagship to hear from Mon Mothma, the brave leader of the Rebel Alliance. She's been through so much. She was a weary veteran long before Han and Luke joined up, and now she knows that the long Star Wars are coming to an end. She plans to commit all of the Rebel fleet to one last attack. If they win, they will have cut the head off the great beast and won freedom for her own people and the rest of the galaxy. But if they lose, they will lose everything. Mothma is not a gambler like Han Solo, though. She is sensible, always sensible. She is taking this course because she believes the Rebels can win. But it must be now or never, all or nothing.
"The Emperor has made a critical error, and the time for our attack has come," she announces.
The pilots sit up and listen. They had expected another delay, or worse, another retreat. Never this. Mon Mothma explains.
"The data brought to us by the Bothan spies pinpoints the exact location of the Emperor's new battle station. With the Imperial fleet spread throughout the galaxy, in a vain effort to engage us, it is relatively unprotected and not yet operational."
Now the pilots are on the edges of their seats.
"Most important of all," continues Mon Mothma, "we've learned that the Emperor himself is personally overseeing the final stages of the construction of this Death Star. Many Bothan spies died to bring us this information."
The Emperor, a helpless target, on a defenseless space station? It sounds almost too good to be true. Ah, but it won't be that easy. Mon Mothma calls up Admiral Akbar, veteran of countless starship battles, to explain the details.
"You can see here the Death Star orbiting the forest moon of Endor," says Akbar, as a holographic map of the Endor planetary system appears. "Although the weapon systems on this Death Star are not yet operational, the Death Star does have a strong defense mechanism. It is protected by an energy shield, which is generated from the nearby forest moon of Endor."
"Aha," think the pilots. "We knew there was a catch."
"The shield must be deactivated if any attack is to be attempted. Once the shield is down, our cruisers will create a perimeter while the fighters fly into the Death Star's superstructure and attempt to knock out the main reactor. General Calrissian has volunteered to lead the fighter attack."
Han Solo looks at Lando and raises an eyebrow. He hates to admit it, but he's impressed.
"Good luck," he says,
then mutters under his breath,
"You're going to need it."
Lando doesn't mention that he's hoping for something more than just luck. He's planning to ask Han Solo to borrow his beloved Millennium Falcon for the Death Star raid. But now, General Madine is outlining the plan for getting rid of the Death Star's defenses.
"The shield generator is, of course, protected by its own shield. If we could get our starfighters close enough, they'd have little chance of knocking it out. However, the moon itself is covered by a thick forest, perfect for a stealth mission."
"Sounds dangerous,"
comments C-3PO, unaware that he'll be part of the mission. Madine continues.
"You may have heard that Nien Nunba recently stole a small Imperial shuttle from an Imperial base."
He gestures to a strange-looking pilot sitting next to Lando. Nien Nunba, one of the few non-human pilots in the Rebel Alliance, beams with pride. There's a murmur of congratulations in the room, but they all know they are not here to celebrate.
"This shuttle has been disguised as a cargo ship," says Madine. "A strike team will fly the shuttle to the forest moon using a secret Imperial code to get past any Star Destroyers patrolling the area. After landing, They will proceed through the forest, locate the shield generator, and destroy it with thermal detonators.
I wonder who they found to pull that off,
Leia murmurs to Han.
General Solo will lead this prong of the attack, says Madine.
This time it's Lando who raises an eyebrow. This plan sounds risky even for Solo. There are sure to be plenty of Imperial troops guarding the generator.
Solo, is your strike team assembled?
Yes, General, replies Solo.
Roars Chewbacca.
Okay, okay, you can come too, says Han. I didn't want to speak for you.
Count me in, says Leia.
Han starts to argue, but changes his mind. First of all, Leia would be a great addition to the team. And second, he sees the determined look in her eyes and knows she's coming anyway.
I'm with you too.
It's Luke Skywalker, bounding through a doorway to join the briefing. His friends are happy to see him back again so soon, and all the rebels are glad to see the hero of the Battle of Yavin return for such an important mission. Leia jumps up to welcome him and instantly realizes something has changed since she last saw him.
Luke, what is it?
She whispers.
Ask me again later,
Luke tells her, both longing to tell her that she is his sister and dreading the other horrible revelation he must deliver, that she is the daughter of Darth Vader. But he's quickly distracted by the welcome from his other friends, Han, Chewie, Lando, and even his old pilot buddy Wedge.
Without Wedge, Luke wouldn't have lasted long enough in the Battle of Yavin to be a hero.
Now Luke's pleased to see that Wedge has been promoted to squadron leader. Meanwhile, C-3PO has been reunited with R2, who lets out a merry string of beeps.
Exciting is hardly the word I would use, says C-3PO.